no longer recognize him? And how could I tell my darkest secret to a complete stranger? May 25th, 1944. He's back, and I'm certain it'll go precisely the same way it did all the other days. I'll ask him who he is, how he knows me, what he wants with me, and I'll receive no response in return. Just silence. It's infuriating that he's been stalking me for over 2 months and doesn't have the decency to even tell me why. Yet each day I hope he returns anyway. I'm terrified, yet the traitorous butterflies fluttering deep in the pits of my stomach have no concern for whom they erupt. I should squash them for revealing the thoughts I try so hard to deny, to run from. This man excites me in a way I've never felt before. I've no idea where my mind has gone, but it certainly isn't in my skull any longer. Once again, the strange man enters my home in silence. This time I'm standing at the island, facing his direction as he approaches. He's unnaturally light on his feet, something that is telling of the type of man he is. He's a phantom. I could disappear without a trace. And I'd deserve it, wouldn't I? So freely watching a stranger walk into my home as if he owns the place. And I'm allowing it, as if I'm not a married woman with a daughter. If he were to decide killing me is in his best interest, I'd only receive pity in response. A helpless, idiotic woman she was, they'd say. What's your name? I ask, attempting to insert even a morsel of authority in my voice. He only smiles, a smile that is equally unsettling and disarming. I narrow my eyes, growing frustrated with his silence. If I'm going to be so stupid, I should at least know the name of the man who I'm sacrificing my intelligence for. Tell me, or I'll have the police find out for me when I call them. Surely you can't hide who you are from them, can you? I threaten, though my voice wobbles. Nothing, not a single word. Growling, I whip around and angrily slide out the largest knife from the butcher block on the counter. Then I'm charging toward him and pressing my chest against his before I know it. I hold the tip of the knife to his throat, thinning my eyes into slits. For a moment, his scent overwhelms me, and my mouth instantly waters from the sandalwood and oranges emanating from him. Just a hint of tobacco, too. And if I weren't so angry, I'd find an excuse to inhale him deeper. I demand you tell me, or I'll slice your throat open without remorse. The authorities will understand, I'm sure. I snip, refocusing on his infuriatingly handsome face. My husband's best friend is a detective. He'll believe me. The corners of his lips tilt up, and fury erupts in my chest. Why are you smiling? I shout, stomping my heeled foot onto the checkered tile floor. Nothing about this is funny. Breathing heavily, I glare at him. I've tried everything, and still nothing. You don't want me, I surmise breathlessly. So, what do you want? He shakes his head in disagreement, and when his lips part, I cease to breathe.
I want you so badly, it hurts to breathe without you near.
He whispers softly, finally, gracing me with his voice. It's so very deep, so rough and alluring, like waves crashing into treacherous boulders beneath a cliff. Both incredibly dangerous forces, yet where one is rugged, the other is beautiful, and together they create something mesmerizing. I work to swallow, paralysis rendering me speechless. All this time, I've been pleading for him to speak. Now that he has, I'm at a loss for what to do.
Why?
I force out finally, the word coming out as a pathetic squeak. Unconcerned with the knife pressed to his throat, he brushes my bottom lip with his thumb, staining it with crimson lipstick. Fire laces through my nerves, sparking brighter when he smears the residue over my chin. It seems crude, yet my eyes flutter, overwhelmed with how sensual it feels.
Because you possess my lungs, as you do my heart, Genevieve, and I intend to take yours for myself.
He answers, his voice deepening impossibly further. His other hand closes around mine, where I hold the blade to his throat. He doesn't remove it from his skin, but rather presses it in deeper. I gasp, resisting, but he doesn't allow it.
I will bleed for you, Mia Rosa, but I must require you to bleed for me too.
He warns. Stop it, I breathe. I don't want to hurt you. He releases my hand, allowing me to pull the blade away from his skin. There's a small scratch and a tiny bead of blood forming atop. I've given myself worse paper cuts.
How sweet.
He murmurs darkly.
You would have fulfilled many of my desires if you had.
Drawing my gaze back up to his, we stare at each other silently. The tension between us is thick, and I find it difficult to breathe with him so close, especially because I feel the burn of his eyes caressing my face, down my neck, and over my breasts. The fire within them is as potent as if he were holding a lighter to my skin. I work to swallow, my throat bobbing and drawing his attention there. Can he see my pulse thrumming beneath the delicate flesh? With the way his pupil dilates and his tongue darts out to wet his bottom lip, it would appear so. What's your name? I ask again breathlessly.
Ronaldo.
Do you want to hurt me, Ronaldo?
Never.
He answers.
I only want to cherish you, Genevieve.
How do you know my name?
I know everything about you, just as I know you will love me too.
That answer arrests the oxygen in my lungs. I'm struggling to find the words to respond to such a bold declaration when he smiles.
Will you kiss me?
He asks quietly, gravel lining his throat. I should slap him for asking such a thing from me. Yet my gaze drifts down to his lips, which are slightly parted, awaiting my touch. I've already offered before, but that was out of desperation. Kissing him will only ensure he returns. I shouldn't lead him to believe that this is anything other than a crime, or that I'm anything other than a helpless victim. I don't feel like a victim, though. I feel powerful, like I possess everything this handsome stranger could ever want, and it's up to me to decide if I give it to him. I quite like how it feels. What's your last name? I ask thoughtfully, so I know who to report to the police should you grow too bold. Mirth dances in his strange eyes.
Capello.
He answers easily.
Ronaldo Capello.
I hum. One kiss, Mr. Capello. Then you leave. I respond, my tone low. I hardly recognize my voice, as if a vixen has possessed me. He doesn't move, allowing me to have control. I press the knife to his throat again, a silent warning that while I may not want to, I will hurt him if he dares take more than I offer. The corner of his mouth ticks, seemingly pleased with my promise. With my breath stuttering from my lungs, I take a single step into him, my breasts brushing against his chest. Surely he'll feel how brutally my heart beats against his. He'll feel how deeply I tremble at his nearness, and how I'm on the verge of collapsing at his feet from how weak my knees have grown. These reactions, they're nothing compared to how my body behaves the moment my lips connect with his. Despite how heavily it rains outside, there's no thunder, which cannot exist without lightning. No wonder it's nowhere to be seen. I've somehow swallowed it. The moment my lips touched Rinaldo's, and the electrical currents are ravaging my insides. Time ceases to exist outside of the way he moves his mouth over mine. Yet he's pulling away all too soon. I follow him, stepping into him closer, but he doesn't allow me another moment of his forbidden kiss. He retreats, and it feels as if he's taking all the oxygen in my lungs with him. Instinctively, my fingers brush over my lips, both in awe of the way they tingle and entirely shocked by what just transpired. A hint of a smirk graces Rinaldo's lips. Then he's turning and walking out the front door without another word, my knife still poised in the air where he had just been. Dropping my hand, I stare sightlessly at the place he was standing only moments ago, questioning if I made the entire thing up. I'm losing my mind. I must be mad to kiss a complete stranger in the home my husband built for me. I blink, now realizing my vision has blurred. A single tear slips down my cheek, only one thought running on a cycle through my head. What have I done? May 25th, 1944. My phantom spoke to me today. For the first time since he started coming around, I raged at him, demanding he tell me his name, even going as far as to hold a knife to his throat. I still can't believe I did that, but that's what he seems to do to me, make me crazy. He finally gave in, and I was shocked when he did. His voice is so deep, so alluring. Once he spoke, I had hoped he'd never stop. I asked him why he kept coming around, watching me. He confessed his desire for me, his need to have me. I asked for his name and he gave it. Rinaldo. An interesting name, but it suited him perfectly. He didn't stay much longer after that, but he did ask for a kiss. I was hesitant, but in the end, I kissed him. I'm ashamed to admit I hadn't even considered John at that moment. All I could think about was what his lips would feel like on my own. My imagination did not do it justice. When he kissed me, I flew into the stars. I don't think I've come back down yet. Chapter 9, The Raven. June 7th, 1944. I watch the moment the clock's hands turn from 8:59 to 9 o'clock. I've been sitting in our bed, staring at the timepiece hanging on the wall opposite me for the past hour. Sarah is already in bed, and John was due to arrive home from work 4 hours ago. These days, it's the new normal. Before, a hot meal would await him at the table, which he'd eat eagerly while listening to Sarah tell us about her day at school or the deli. After dinner, we'd gather around the radio and dance to tunes. John taught Sarah the jitterbug, and I would sing along, the three of us laughing until our cheeks ached. Some nights, we'd bring blankets to the glass room. There, we would stare up at the sky and search for all the constellations. Now it's just Sarah and me, occupying ourselves. I still dance and sing with her, but there's a noticeable absence that curves Sarah's shoulders inward. She doesn't laugh as loud or smile as wide, and oftentimes I catch her staring at the front door, wondering when her daddy is coming home. I tried my best to shield her from his drinking, but there have been many occasions where I failed, and she would smell the cheap whiskey on his breath and watch him make a fool of himself as he stumbled and tripped around the house. I hate that she's witnessing our marriage fall apart. More so, I hate that her relationship with her father is also beginning to crumble. I've long since written in my journal for the night, staining my rage in ink. So I grab a Virginia Woolf novel, To the Lighthouse, from my nightstand, hoping to preoccupy my mind while I wait. 20 more minutes tick by before I hear the distinct slam of the front door. Instantly, my spine snaps straight, and I toss the book back onto my nightstand. I hadn't absorbed a single word of it. My heart is thumping, the rage that's been simmering deep in my chest now coming to a boil. A few moments later, John stumbles through the door, tripping over absolutely nothing, causing him to glare at the floor like it personally set out to make a fool of him. When he sets his sights on me, a sloppy smile takes over his face.
"What are you doing up so late?"
he asks. He flicks a gaze at the clock, then narrows his eyes, as if that's going to make everything stop spinning.
"Don't you have to be up in a few hours to get Sarah ready for school? That's very irresponsible of you, Gigi,"
he blathers on. "It's only 9, John, and if you weren't so drunk, you'd remember her last day of school was yesterday. She ended the year at the top of her class, remember?"
"Oh."
"Oh?" The infuriating man forgot about his daughter's accomplishment, and all he has to say is, "Oh." "You were supposed to take her out for ice cream today to celebrate," I remind him stonily. "She cried because she thought you were hurt." He waves a dismissive hand in the air.
"I'll tell her I'm sorry and take her out tomorrow instead. We got all summer."
My throat constricts with fury, and it takes 3 deep breaths before I cool my rage enough to speak at a reasonable volume. I clear my throat. "Okay then, have you sent the check-in for our mortgage and utilities today?" He casts me an annoyed glare.
"Yes, Gigi. I said I would, and so that's what I did. Why are you always nagging me?"
I bite my tongue before something malicious comes out of my mouth. He's clearly sauced, and I don't want to start a fight with him in this state. "I'm just making sure you remembered since you've been so stressed," I respond woodenly.
"Well, now I'm even more stressed. I got paid today, and my entire damn check went to bills. Barely enough left for a pack of beer."
He mutters the last sentence, and I'm so damn annoyed by it that it's impossible to curb my reaction. I roll my eyes, and within a second, he's storming over to me and getting in my face before I can utter a word. Like a flip of a switch, he went from normal to a raging man.
"Don't you roll your eyes at me. I am your husband, and you will show me respect,"
he hisses, spittle wetting my face. I see red, and my hands tremble from the fury working its way through my system. John has never talked to me like that. It takes effort to remain still rather than lashing out. My palm itches to connect with his face. Until he began drinking, I'd never laid hands on him, although I never had a reason to before. "You're drunk, Jonathan. Where have you been?" I ask flatly, forcing calmness in my tone. My nails dig into the flesh of my palms, an attempt to abate the shaking. He straightens, staring down at me.
"You know where I've been,"
he mutters, turning away from me.
"You have no idea what it's like to be me. I go to work and bust my ass all day while you sit at home and write in that stupid journal. What do you even do to deserve to live in this big house, Gigi? Wasn't it enough that we decorated it like some godforsaken horror film? You get to just live in luxury, and when I finally find something to blow off some steam, I'm not allowed."
By the time he finishes his tirade, his chest is heaving, and I'm struck speechless. Slowly, I get out of the bed, seething at him. "You told me you didn't want me to get a job," I bite out. "I offered to join the workforce now that so many are fighting in this war, and you refused to let me. You said I needed to be home with Sarah, and you were happy to take care of our needs."
"Do you know how embarrassing it'd be for me to send my wife off to work? The men at the firm would laugh at me."
"Then what do you want from me?" I almost shout, losing the precarious hold I had on my temper, but mindful of our daughter enough to quiet my volume. He's silent for a beat, then he's getting in my face again. This time, I make no promises to myself not to slap him stupid.
I want you to do your wifely duties.
He spits. Before I can ask what exactly he means by that, he's fisting my hair tightly at the back of my head and forcing my face into the bed. I struggle against him, my nails clawing at his hand as panic overrides any rational thinking. No, 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 stop, John, I whisper shout. Even intoxicated, he's so much stronger than I am. I bite back a scream, conscious that Sarah is sleeping down the hallway, and the last thing I want is for her to walk in on this. It would devastate me to have her see her father like this. John, stop, I bark, still attempting to keep my volume down while also hoping my voice gets through to him. It doesn't. He's lifting my nightgown and pushing it up past my hips. He tears down my knickers, exposing me to him. John, I snap louder. But again, he doesn't listen. Please, just stop, I whisper, the words coming out as a helpless squeak. Still, he doesn't listen. I force myself to still completely, my muscles locking tight. There's no use in fighting, and I refuse to wake Sarah up. The best thing to do is just let it happen. The sooner I let him finish, the sooner he gets away from me. Tears well up in my eyes and spill over as he quickly removes his belt and unfastens his trousers. He breathes heavily as I feel him push inside me, the pain blinding for a moment. He grunts, keeping my hair fisted in his grip as he moves. With each thrust, his groans grow louder. I squeeze my eyes shut, praying that Sarah stays asleep. Did he bother to lock our door? No, he's too far gone. Anytime we've been intimate before, we were always so careful to keep our noise level below a whisper. She won't understand what's happening if she sees this. She can't see this. Inhaling deeply, I arch my back and squeeze my legs tighter, evoking a sharp moan from him. His pace quickens, and my heart thuds heavily, silently urging him on. One more thrust and he stills, another sharp grunt leaving his lips. Once he's finished, he pulls away, and I make quick work of scrambling off the bed to pull up my underwear and fix my nightdress. John tucks himself away, a satisfied gleam in his glazed eyes.
See, that's what a husband should come home to every night. I work hard, Gigi. It's the least you could do.
I swallow down my retort and instead hurry out of the room. Unsurprisingly, he doesn't stop me. He got what he wanted, and I'm sure it'll be a matter of 5 seconds before he passes out. I check on Sarah first, creaking the door open to see her form huddled beneath the blankets, sleeping soundly. My eyes close, the relief almost dizzying. Overcome with it, I lean against the doorframe and just watch her for a moment, a few more tears slipping down my cheek. If this is my life, it's one I'll readily accept for her. If she sleeps as peacefully as she does now, it's worth it. All of this with John, it's worth it. Inhaling deeply, I leave her to her dreams and head to the washroom. Moonlight spears through the window, offering just enough visibility to use the toilet and quickly clean myself up. When I'm finished, I stand at the sink, staring at myself in the mirror. I can't see much of my features, but I make out enough to notice how glossy my eyes are and the tear stains tracking down my cheeks. I turn the faucet on just enough for a small trickle of water to come out, and I splatter it on my face, wiping away any evidence that I was upset. After patting my face dry, I straighten again, only to bite back a scream for the second time tonight. There's a man standing behind me, directly in front of the window, only his silhouette visible. I hadn't noticed when I was washing my face, but the temperature in the room has dropped, chilling the air substantially. I'm paralyzed, unable to move save for my heart thundering in my chest. Typically, I ignore them, I found that the more I acknowledge them, the more they seek my attention. I'm not sure if the events tonight have me more rattled than usual, but I can't seem to pull myself away from the mirror and calmly leave. Instead, I can only stand frozen, silently panicking. A few beats later, the man begins to approach, sending my heart flying up into my throat. My trembling becomes violent, yet still my feet refuse to unglue from the floor. It comes closer and closer until I feel its ice-cold breath whispering across my nape. It's right behind me now. My mind screams at me to get out, my survival instincts thrashing against their unmovable prison, desperately trying to get me to just move. A deep growl emanates from its chest, and apparently that's the trigger I needed to finally move. Instantly, I dart to my left toward the door and scramble out of the washroom without looking back. Stomach filled with adrenaline and panic, I run down the hallway and burst into my bedroom, almost completely forgetting about who I left inside. I softly shut the door behind me and plant myself against it as I coax my breathing into a normal rhythm again. It takes a few minutes, but soon I calm myself enough for my heart to return to a steady pace. It's not the first time a spirit has gotten that close, but it has been a little while. And of course, it tested that boundary when I was at my most vulnerable. Men. My disdain for them even surpasses the physical realm. I take another deep breath and focus on my husband, my upper lip instantly curling with revulsion. As suspected, John is passed out on the bed, snoring loudly. And of course, he's still in his work clothes, which in itself is abhorrent. Though I suppose I shouldn't be surprised to be sleeping next to filth. My husband has proven himself to be exactly that after tonight. June 7th, 1944. I think I hate my husband. What a terrible thing for me to write, to even think. Yet, staring at the words now, I cannot find even a morsel of regret. How could he do this to Sarah and me? How could he build a beautiful life with me, create an even more beautiful child, and then destroy us so callously? I'm heartbroken, not only for myself, but for our daughter, too. He had made a promise to take her out for ice cream after dinner to celebrate her ending the school year at the top of her class. He never showed, and Sarah broke into tears, concerned that something terrible had happened to her father. And that made me so angry. Our sweet daughter didn't think for one second that her father had forgotten about her. The only thing that made sense in her head was that he had gotten in some sort of accident. I knew the truth, but how could I tell her? How could I wittingly break her heart? So I lied. I assured her that her father was okay and that he must have gotten held up late by an important client. She understands her daddy works hard, and while disappointed, I know that she will forgive him. But I won't. I think I hate my husband.
Chapter 10, The Phantom. June 8th, 1944. Of all the days I've walked into Parsons Manor, I've never entered without being greeted by sparkling blue eyes. For the past 2 weeks, I've visited her every day while Sarah and John were away, spending hours with her until it was time for her family to come home. And as each day passed, I've watched her timidness melt away as she grew accustomed to my presence, trusting even. I've been careful with her, focusing on bearing ourselves for one another emotionally rather than physically. I've been honest about needing to keep my job a secret for now, and she's respected it. However, I did assure her I'm not visiting her because of John's debts, at least not anymore. Otherwise, we've stripped ourselves raw and have shared secrets and dreams that neither of us has confessed to another soul. She's told me everything about herself From her strict upbringing at the hands of her religious mother and the neglect of her absent father, to her sightings of the ghosts that haunt Parsons Manor, and how they both frighten and excite her, my obsession for her has deepened to love, and I care little about how short of a time I've known her. I only care that I spend the rest of my life with her. Today, I stop short, taking in the view of Genevieve sitting in her rocking chair, staring out the window sightlessly, hands crossed in her lap. Her journal is nowhere to be seen. It's late morning. The sunshine glows on her face, yet even beneath the bright rays, she radiates darkness. Concern pinches my brow, and I slowly approach her, cautious of startling her out of her musings. Mia Rosa? I ask softly. After a few seconds, she drags her gaze to mine. Her stare is empty, and though her black hair is curled to perfection and her lips are painted red, she looks nothing like my Genevieve. I close the distance between us, adrenaline and worry unfurling in the pit of my stomach. My heart races as I sit on the stool in front of her and grab hold of her hand, frowning when I feel how cold it is. What happened? I ask, struggling to keep my voice calm. Instantly, her bottom lip trembles and tears spring to her eyes. There's no thought to my actions, only instinct. I stand and scoop her from the chair and carry her over to the couch. Setting her on the plush velvet, I coerce her to lie down before lying next to her, pulling her into my embrace. She's stiff, but doesn't resist, and she lays her head on my shoulder as she tucks her feet beneath her. My love, please tell me what's happened, I plead, tucking a curl behind her ear. A soft sob ruptures from her throat, prompting her to slap a hand over her mouth to contain it. She shakes her head as if she's disappointed in herself and trembles in my hold while she works to calm down. All the while, I remind myself that I can't kill someone if I don't know who they are yet. It does little to ease the murderous rage building inside of me, or the need to get up and wrap my bare hands around someone's throat as I watch the life drain from their eyes.
I'm fine.
She chokes out, finally. I crook a finger beneath her wobbling chin and gently lift her watery gaze to mine. Tell me the truth, I demand gently. She sniffles, then hiccups. Before she can cover her mouth again in embarrassment, I grab hold of her hand and squeeze. Sighing, she closes her eyes.
John,
she whispers, her words cracking with unshed tears. The explosion of my fury is instant, and it takes everything in me to keep myself planted on the cushion.
He came home sauced again last night.
Inhaling deeply, I take a few seconds to compose myself before I ask, did he hurt you, Mia Rosa? Her response is delayed, but she ultimately nods. Another deep breath, though blackness licks at the edges of the little vision I have left. Will you tell me what he's done?
Ronaldo, I don't want you to hurt him.
If she's fearful for his life, then he's done something that deserves retribution. And that has a rage so black polluting my insides, my organs feel like they're wilting and rotting beneath it. Genevieve. The word is stern, though not sharp. I refuse to force her if she truly doesn't want to share. But if she chooses not to, I will have to ask John myself. She sighs.
He just demanded a marital duty from me, and I told him no, but he didn't listen, so
I stand so abruptly she gasps. I hold up my pointer finger at her, silently asking for a moment. My vision is completely snuffed. The average human is capable of a wide range of emotions, yet I can't seem to feel a single one outside the urge for violence. There's a beast I keep contained deep inside me. It's a side of me I scarcely let free. And for the first time in years, I'm on the verge of letting it loose. John Parsons is a dead man. There are many men who were raised to believe that they have ownership of their wives' bodies, and there are many women who are raised being told to give that autonomy away, and they do, simply because it's expected of them. But that is not how I was raised. According to my mother, my father didn't stand for mistreatment of women, and neither do I. For John to... I close my eyes and try to breathe. For John to force himself on Genevieve is one of the worst things a man can do to a woman. He violated her. He stripped her of her humanity and took something from her she was not willing to give.
Ronaldo.
The whisper is soft, and I hate that she feels the need to placate me. It takes a few more moments for my limited vision to return. When it does, I sit beside her and pull her back into my embrace. I'm sorry, my love, I rasp, placing a gentle kiss on her forehead. I lost my mind. She peers up at me with sadness, her thick black lashes heavy with tears and clumped into little spikes. Though the redness in the whites of her eyes brightens her blue irises into a startling shade, her smile is somber as she asks,
Have you found it?
I shake my head. Not since the first moment I saw you, I confess quietly, brushing the pad of my thumb over her red bottom lip. I don't understand how anyone could ever hurt you, Genevieve. She raises a hand, gently brushing her fingers over my chin, my stubble scraping against her fingertips.
You hurt people, don't you, Ronaldo?
She asks. Her tone isn't accusing, but curious. Yes, I admit, unable to lie to her.
Will you refrain from hurting John for me?
Again, I close my eyes, searching for my next breath. How can I deny her when I know it would break her heart? You can't. I know. Why? Tell me why.
Because he's the father of my child.
She responds softly.
And as much as it pains me to look at him, I don't wish to see him dead. We've been married for so long, and while these past few months have opened my eyes to how truly unhappy I've been in our marriage, it would devastate my daughter if she lost him. And that hurts worse. That hurts so much worse than anything he could ever do to me. I know it's hard to understand, but even if not for me, please do it for Sarah. She's the only reason that truly matters.
I've never met a mother as selfless as her. My mother lost herself after my father died. She held on for years, but by the time she passed, I no longer recognized her. I didn't hate her for loving him so much, but I resented her for loving him more than me. While I may never know what it's like to have a child of my own, I do understand that kind of love, and it's exactly that love that has me conceding. I dip my chin in acquiescence.
Promise me,
she whispers.
Promise me you will never play a hand in his death.
One day, I will tell her just how close her husband has come to death, though not by my hands. He only just paid back Tommy, plus interest, but I imagine he will be back at that table in no time, digging himself into yet another hole. The muscle in my jaw pulses, but I force myself to speak the words. I promise, Mia Rosa. Her fingers brush over my cheek again, almost in reverence.
Distract me. Tell me something about you I don't know.
She pleads softly. It takes a few moments of sifting through memories, trying to find something of substance, before I recall the scar on my hand. I hold it up for her, showing her the thin white lines spearing across the top of my palm. I got this from saving a baby raccoon when I was 15, I tell her. Her eyes widen, interest sparking in her gaze. He was caught in a chain-link fence and screaming at the top of his lungs. He was struggling and hurting himself. Poor thing freaked out when he saw me coming.
Did he bite you?
She asks. Thankfully, no. The metal was digging into his sides, and I was trying to keep him from hurting himself more when I was trying to get him out. Got really cut up in the process, and earned me this gash. Her fingers trace over it gently. But once he was free, he just stood there and stared at me.
Really? He didn't run off?
Quite the opposite. He followed me around everywhere I went after that, and he even let me clean his wounds from the fence. I named him Lynx. She stares up at me with wonder.
You had a pet raccoon?
I grin. I suppose I did. He was my friend and lived a long life. Her bottom lip trembles, but she quickly drops her gaze, likely wanting to refocus her attention before she cries again.
And the ring? Where did it come from?
My mother gifted it to my father on their first wedding anniversary. After he passed, she gave it to me. It was too big for me at first, but once I grew into it, I put it on and haven't taken it off since.
That's so sweet,
she whispers.
You're good at holding on to things.
I am, I agree. Just as I will always hold on to you, Mia Rosa. She lifts her watery blue gaze to mine again.
Why do you call me that, Mia Rosa?
She asks softly. I grab her hand briefly, placing a kiss atop it, before letting her continue whispering her fingers across my skin. There are no words to describe how heartwarming it is knowing she has gone through something horrific, yet still seeks my touch. My mother told me a story about the time my father asked her out on their first date. He was in love with her and chased after her wherever she went. She said he'd asked her on dates 1,000 times before, and every time she would ask him why. He would give these shallow reasons, like her beauty or her smile, and so on. So she said no. Then, one day, he came to her with a single rose in his hands, the thorns plucked from the stem. He handed it to her and asked her on a date. When she asked why, he admitted that he was dirt poor and stole that rose from his neighbor's garden. The owner caught him and shot at him for trespassing. Clearly, he got away unscathed, except for his bleeding hand. The thorns had pricked him, and he couldn't fathom giving my mother a rose when it could hurt her. So he sheared them from the stem and ran straight to her. He told her that despite his nearly dying, he'd do it again, that he'd put himself through hell just to see her smile, that he would take all her pain so she would suffer none. By the time I'm finished, I look down to find Genevieve staring up at me with tear-filled eyes.
She said yes, right? She didn't make him try again?
I grin. How could she say no? She smiles.
If you are anything like your father, then I imagine she couldn't.
I swipe away a curl from her face, reveling in the feel of her soft skin against mine. I call you my Rose, because for you, I would take all your pain, so you would suffer none. I tell her softly, I would go through hell for you, die for you, do anything you asked. I love you, Mia Rosa, more than you will ever know. She smiles, albeit shakily, a single tear slipping down her cheek.
Can you sing, Ronaldo?
I'm surprised by her question, but I know that despite what I would do for her, she is suffering. So, if singing eases that, I would do whatever she asked. After a few beats, I say, a little.
Can you sing something for me? I promise I'll return the favor one day.
I could never deny her. I settle deeper into the couch, the two of us getting comfortable. She lays her head on my chest, and I croon in her ear the words to T'ho vista piangere by Alfredo Clerici. The sad song lulls her to sleep, but I may never find another moment of rest until John Parsons ceases to breathe. And since I'm beholden to my promise to Genevieve, I suppose the only thing for me to do is spend every waking hour loving her the way she deserves.
June 8th, 1944. I think I love Ronaldo. Another terrible thing for me to write as a married woman, yet I still do not feel any regret for my words. Before Ronaldo arrived, I was in an unimaginable amount of pain after what John did to me last night. Truthfully, I was still trying to wrap my head around it, to somehow justify his actions in my head to make it hurt less. I'm his wife, and he didn't do anything I haven't allowed him to do before. Yet those reminders didn't make me feel any less empty, nor did it rid me of the utter negativity polluting my mind and soul. It made me want to crawl outside my skin. And for the first time in my life, I truly did not want to be alive, if only to stop feeling that way. If I had slipped off into nothingness, I would have welcomed it. Until Ronaldo walked in. While these feelings did not magically disappear, I did find a little morsel of light in the darkness plaguing my mind. When he cradled me to his chest and told me about the beautiful love story between his parents, it settled my aching heart a little. And then when he looked down upon me, even more beautiful words spilling from his lips, it started to sing. I couldn't help but ask him to sing too. I wanted to know if his voice would harmonize with the melody in my heart. It did. Chapter 11, The Raven. July 7th, 1944. My heart is racing, and I'm not entirely sure why yet. Lies, you know exactly why. It's been years since I felt this nervous. The butterflies in my stomach and I are old friends, and the last time they visited was my first date with John. I thought I laid them to rest after that, but it appears they've come back with a vengeance. I've reapplied my red lipstick twice already, and it's hardly been an hour since Sarah left for school. She's taking a few summer classes so she can graduate early. Other days, she's either working at the deli or spending time with her best friend Martha and her family. Martha is the oldest child and had to drop out of school this past year to care for her younger siblings while her parents work. They're not very wealthy, So Sarah has taken it upon herself to pick up more hours at the deli so she can help their family. When she first told me, I bawled like a baby in awe of how she's grown up to be so selfless, unlike her mother. However, I did ask her to conserve most of her earnings, preaching about the importance of saving money. I didn't tell her I'm terrified she'll need that money if John puts us on the streets. Sighing, I force myself to keep my tongue in my mouth this time. I'm paranoid that my lipstick smudged on my teeth, so I keep licking them. I'm acting like a fool, a love-struck fool. Ever since Ronaldo found out what John did to me, he's been diligent in visiting me during the week over the past month. We've spent most days getting to know one another, sharing our childhoods and stories from our youth. And aside from a few stolen kisses and his holding me in his arms, he's kept his hands to himself. At first, I was thankful, far too shaken to even desire a man's touch. But now I crave it. I want him to replace that terrible memory. Luckily, John hasn't forced himself on me since, but he has lost his temper and acted aggressively a few times, throwing things in fits of drunken rage. One night he punched a hole in the wall, which he promptly fixed that weekend. He's out of control, but there is one facet I have control of, and that's Ronaldo's affection. I want to know what being loved, truly loved, by Ronaldo feels like, and I want him to know what it's like to be truly loved by me, and I intend for us to find out today. I place a hand on my forehead, shaking my head at myself. With my free hand, I lean heavily on the kitchen island. I'm getting myself all worked up, and it may be for nothing. There's no guarantee he'll even show up to... The front door opens, then clicks shut behind me. My heart stalls in my chest, and my muscles tighten. A chill scatters down my spine, causing it to snap straight. My back is to the living room, where he slowly approaches. I can't see him, but my God, I can feel him. How does one breathe when the one who possesses their lungs is standing behind them? It takes a few moments to work up the nerve to turn around and face him. Another breath gets caught in my throat. After all this time, I still haven't gotten used to how tall he is, how imposing of a man he is. He only wears a black button-up, matching trousers, and a fedora today. But his piercing stare has me completely arrested. My God, I'm still not accustomed to how devastatingly beautiful he is. Ronaldo, I breathe, his name rolling off my tongue like it's a language I've been practicing for years. One corner of his mouth quirks up, suspending further oxygen from reaching my lungs. This man, he will be the death of me. It's as certain as the moon rising.
Mia Rosa,
he greets, his deep, volcanic voice as smooth as lava, yet as rough as the rock that inhabits it. My hand drifts to my throat, where my pulse thrums heavily. I feel the skin there reddening, my body heating under his blazing stare. The echo of his footsteps radiates in each heartbeat as he nears. By the time he's standing within an inch from me, my chest is heaving, and I'm inhaling his delectable scent.
You look like you have something on your mind,
he drawls casually. I love you. The words burst out of me like water from a broken pipe. That wasn't entirely what I meant to say, but I couldn't keep it bottled inside anymore. Several emotions flit across his gaze, surprise, elation, then absolute hunger. I hope you weren't hoping for a romantic moment, I babble, because that was entirely unromantic of me. I'm a little ashamed that—
If I could, I'd lower to a knee on this checkered floor and ask for your hand. It would be entirely unromantic of me, but it wouldn't stop me either.
I bite my lip, and it's like all my happiness has filled up a balloon inside me. It's floating up toward my throat, expanding my chest until I fear it's going to pop.
Love cannot define what I feel for you, but I will settle for it with my words and show you what I truly feel with my actions.
He says quietly. He crooks a finger and glides it across my cheekbone, awakening a lightning storm in the air and sending the currents scattering across my skin.
You look absolutely divine today, my love.
He purrs. My eyes flutter from his electric touch, and goosebumps rise as he slides his hand to my nape, cupping it firmly. How divine, I whisper breathlessly.
Enough to feast on,
he rasps. But then he draws away, and my heart surges. I grab his arm before he can retreat, catching him by surprise. Then prove it, I demand shakily, before fastening my bottom lip between my teeth. God, I'm nervous, so nervous, though I'm sure of what I want. He studies me closely, scrutinizing every detail on my face before focusing on my lip trapped between my teeth. It's unnerving, especially when his expression is so carefully smoothed into marble. What is he thinking? He must think me ridiculous.
You want me to eat you, Mia Rosa?
I flush hot, my cheeks burning. Well, not actually, I didn't mean, I huff, frustrated with my stuttering. I want you to touch me, Ronaldo, please. His hand returns to the nape of my neck, while I move the two of mine to his chest. His heart thumps heavily, the only indication that he's more affected than he lets on. With his other hand, he toys with the button at the collar of my silky white blouse.
These clothes look exquisite on you, Genevieve.
My mouth dries, and it takes an effort to swallow. His saying my name like that, it has a breathtaking effect on me. My core throbs and I squeeze my thighs tight. His fingers drift up to the gold raven pendant dangling below the hollow of my throat. I found it in a boutique years ago. It reminded me of my favorite Edgar Allan Poe poem, and while it's a simple piece, it's always been my favorite. Now he toys with the small bird, sending goosebumps scattering across my flesh.
Your clothes would look so much better on the floor, though, don't you think?
On the floor? I repeat dumbly, the question coming out as a pathetic squeak. My cheeks burn in response, mortified that this man has barely touched me and I'm acting like a fool. He hums his approval, dropping the necklace and staring at me with a reverence I haven't seen in, well, ever. How does one look from him have me questioning my entire life until this point? Were John and I ever truly in love? Or were we two kids that latched onto the first relationship we found? I had kissed many before John, but I had taken none of them seriously. John and I were each other's first for nearly everything. First date, first relationship, first lover. And I never looked back. Never thought to. For a long time, I had convinced myself that was ideal. Neither of us needed to explore because we loved each other. Now our marriage is falling apart, and I'm unable to blame the man before me. The destruction began well before Ronaldo came around, but he might just be the one to knock over the last pillar that's keeping John and me standing. John has done terrible things. Yet I cannot say with confidence that he's ever stepped out on our marriage. Aside from the night when he mistook me for another woman, I haven't seen any other indication that he's strayed. I've never smelled the perfume of another woman on his clothes or seen red lips.